Good morning. Today's scripture reading will be Matthew chapter 25, verses 31 through 40. Matthew chapter 25, verses 31 through 40. When the Son of Man comes in His glory, and all the angels with Him, He will sit on the glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before Him, and He will separate the people from one another, as the shepherd separates the sheep and the goats. He will put the sheep on His right, and the goats on His left. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me." Then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and visit you?" The king will reply, "Truly, I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you have done for me."
Good morning.
Morning.
So good to be here. So good to have all of our visitors here with us. I brought a band of visitors myself, and so it's good to have them. Today we're going to start off by having a miniature physics lesson, okay? So I'm going to need to put my Bible down for a second. And I have a ball up here with me, a rubber band ball, and you might have been in a physics class before, maybe you didn't take one in school, but I think we all know some of the basics, right? You know, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction bouncing off the floor. Kind of demonstrates that, right? I'm not going to get too crazy with this because I know I'm going to lose the ball at some point. But what would happen if I were to roll this ball down the middle aisle here? Okay, maybe you'd catch it. Let's say I roll it down. It would either be caught or hit something along the way, or it would keep rolling until the friction of the floor and the air resistance stopped this ball from moving, right? But there's something that keeps that ball moving in the first place. Let me give you another example. I have up here a ball up on the screen. Now this ball, let's say, is on a plane here, a flat plane here. And let's say, for the sake of argument, we were to push it into this bowl-like area. What would happen? Would it fall down into the bottom? Would it fall in the bottom? Would it go right down there and stop? Or would it instead kind of fall up and just go onto the next plane and keep going? Or would something else happen? Or would it kind of go toward the edge, fall down, and then, yeah, I see somebody making the action. It suddenly starts to kind of go back and forth, right? What is the force? What is the law of physics that makes it do that? What is the law that makes an object keep moving even when it shouldn't keep moving? Yes? Inertia, that's right, okay? An object at rest tends to stay at rest. An object in motion tends to stay in motion. It's the reason a grocery cart full of food is hard to get moving, right? But once it's moving, it's hard to stop. That's inertia at work, okay? An object at rest tends to stay at rest, and an object in motion tends to stay in motion. In other words, every matter in the universe, all matter in the universe, is lazy. It wants to do what it's doing. It doesn't want to change. And I think inertia could be described as things not wanting to change, okay? Things don't want to change what they're doing. If I were to come up here and try to move this podium up here, I'd have a hard time because that's a heavy podium and it wants to stay where it's at. That's also inertia. The same as something moving is shown through inertia. Something that wants to stay still is also proving inertia. But I think in our own lives, I think in our corporate lives, in our social lives, and especially our spiritual lives, we all have inertia. we all have a tendency to want to stay the same. A lot of us don't want to change what we're doing. And that means if we are sitting still in our spiritual lives, then we're going to want to stay that way. But if we're moving forward in our spiritual lives, if we're constantly trying to do better, if we are pushing forward, then we're going to keep pushing forward. Because there's a spiritual inertia. And a Christian at rest tends to stay at rest. But a Christian in motion will tend to stay in motion. The same could be said as a congregation. A congregation that is at rest is going to stay at rest. But a congregation that is in motion and doing things and trying to do good in their community is going to keep doing those things because of spiritual inertia. Go ahead and turn with me, if you will, to the book of Matthew. Matthew, chapters 24 and 25 is where we're going to be getting into in just a few moments. But we need to understand the greater context of what's going on here. Jesus has just entered Jerusalem on the final week before the crucifixion. He's been teaching and preaching many things. He's been having debates with different teachers of the law and Pharisees and so forth. But here he is in chapters 24 and 25 speaking more or less to his disciples. And he's warning them, among other things, he's warning them about, I believe, the destruction of Jerusalem at some point. But he's also warning them about his approach, his return. In other words, the moment that hasn't quite yet happened, right? Even today, Jesus hasn't come back yet. And he's warning his disciples on how to be ready for that occasion. And we find there in verse 42, it says, "Therefore be on the alert, for you do not know the day when the day of the Lord is coming." You don't know which day it's happening. And yet, instead of just kind of waiting for it to happen without getting ready, we have to be prepared. And so Jesus, after verse 42, begins telling us several parables in a row, several illustrations, trying to illustrate how to be ready. How can we be ready for the Lord's return? And he illustrates it in several ways, starting there in chapter 24 and starting in verse 45. He says, verse 43. "But be sure of this, that if the head of the house had known at what time of night the thief was coming, he would have been on the alert and would not have allowed his house to be broken into. For this reason, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour when you do not think he will." So first of all, it says, be alert here, and he continues that idea in the next two verses, where he describes a faithful and sensible slave. It says, "Who then is the faithful and sensible slave whom his master put in charge of his household to give them their food at the proper time? Blessed is the slave whom his master finds doing when he comes." But then he describes another slave, doesn't he? Another slave who thinks, "You know what? My master's going to take a while. He's not going to be here in quite a long time, so I can do whatever I want." And what he winds up doing is he beats the other slaves, he gets drunk, he isn't doing his master's work. And therefore, when the master returns, he's not ready. He's surprised. And of course, he's punished. He wasn't ready. Why? Because he was disobedient. And we need to be the same. We need to be not the same as disobedient, but we need to be obedient, okay? We want to be ready for the master's return. We've got to be alert, and this is the idea Jesus is presenting. But he also says we need to be obedient. We want to be ready when the master returns. We need to be doing what he would have us to do, even when we think he's not watching. And that's what true integrity is, isn't it? Then we get to chapter 25, starting in verse 1, we read of what we call the parable of the 10 virgins. And we don't know exactly what was going on here that Jesus is describing. We're not too familiar with a lot of the Jewish practices of the day. But what we can guess is that it's a wedding ceremony, and that these women in these 10 virgins are in some way, shape, or form kind of like bridesmaids. And they're being asked to perform a part of the ceremony with their lamps, probably lighting some kind of procession into the great feast, okay? Now, we remember, even today, a wedding is a big deal. But back then, it was an even bigger deal. And one's participation in a wedding was very indicative of your social status. In other words, it was a big deal to be one of these 10 virgins who could be there leading the bridegroom into the feast. It was a big deal. Women wanted to be a part of it. And yet Jesus tells the story of 10 of them, 5 being he calls prudent, and 5 who were foolish. And the 5 who were prudent, they brought oil for their lamps to make sure that they had enough when the bridegroom came, because he was delayed or something along those lines. But the foolish ones, of course, were not ready. Go ahead and start reading with me here when it says verse 6. But at midnight there was a shout, "Behold, the bridegroom! Come out to meet him." Then all those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. The foolish said to the prudent, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the prudent answered, "No, there will not be enough for us and you too. Go instead to the dealers and buy some for yourselves." And while they were going away to make the purchase, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding feast, and the door was shut. Later, the other virgins also came, saying, "Lord, Lord, open up for us." But he answered, "Truly I say to you, I do not know you. Be on the alert then, for you do not know the day nor the hour." These women had all fallen asleep. They didn't know when the bridegroom would appear. They were not on the alert. And they were not being prudent, these 5 particularly. Notice, all 10 of them fell asleep. But the 5 who fell asleep were still ready because they were prudent. So if you want to be ready for the Lord's return, you've got to be prudent. You've got to be obedient. But most of all, you've got to be alert. Now, all of this being said, we come to verse 14 to a parable that is probably one of the most well-known parables in all of Scripture. And it's a parable that I know that we all enjoy to study. And it's this particular parable that I'd like us to zoom in on, because I believe it tells us a lot about this idea of inertia. This story starts off similarly to some of the ones previously. There is a master, and he has servants. And the master is going off on a journey. He's going off, and we don't know how long the master will be away. And so the master decides, in verse 14, to give some of his possessions over to these slaves so that they could be stewards while he's gone. Look at verse 14. It says, "For it is just like a man about to go on a journey, who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his own ability. And he went on his journey." So we start off here, and we need to understand a talent here was a measure of weight used by the Romans, and really it was a form of currency. It was basically like giving these slaves money, right? He's giving them of his possessions, of his money, so that they can then use his money and work with it while he's gone. Now, notice, not every one of them was given an equal amount. I think a lot of the times we have such a longing and a desire for equality, but the simple fact is we're all born in different situations. Some of us are born with more wealth. Some of us kind of have situations thrust upon us where we can gain more wealth, and others, not so much, right? But the idea is not that we were all given the exact amount. The idea here is, what do we use? How do we use what we have been given? So here we have each slave being given, it says, according to their ability. Now that's an important distinction that we'll come back to in just a moment. But go ahead and look at verse 16. It says, "Immediately the one who had received 5 talents went and traded with them and gained 5 more talents. In the same manner, the one who had received the 2 talents gained 2 more. But he who received the one talent went away and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. So we have the first two slaves, they get to work, right? They go out and they use that money to make more money. They're doing exactly what the master would have them to do, right? But the third slave, he decides, you know what? I'm not going to risk this money, okay? And I want us to understand, these two slaves beforehand, they were risking their master's money. They were buying and trading. They were spending money so that they could make money in return. And yes, there was a benefit to what they were doing. Yes, they made money back, but that wasn't a guarantee. And so we have this third slave who says, I don't want to mess with it. I'm instead going to take what I was given and make sure that exactly what I was given is exactly what I'll give back. So he goes away and he buries it so that no one can find it. It'll be ready, good as new, when the master returns. When I was young, I didn't understand what was so bad about that. I didn't understand why is that such a bad thing. Why does the master react the way he does? Because, spoiler alert, he's not going to be happy. Why does he react the way he does when all this guy did was keep the money safe? Well, let's look at the master's return. Look at his return and look at how he responds. We're going to read several verses here. Go ahead. Please follow along with me. It says verse 19. Now, after a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. The one who had received the 5 talents came up and brought 5 more talents, saying, Master, you entrusted with me 5 talents. See, I have gained 5 more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will now put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. Verse 22. Also, the one who had received the 2 talents came up and said, Master, you have entrusted 2 talents to me. See, I have gained 2 more. And again, the master responds very similarly. He says, Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Now enter into the joy of your master. Then we have the third slave. And he comes up, verse 24, it says, And the one who had received the 1 talent came up and said, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you do not so, and gathering where you've scattered no seed. And I was afraid, and went away and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours. But his master answered, and said to him, You wicked, lazy slave. You knew that I reap where I did not sow, and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have put my money in the bank, and on my arrival I would have received my money back with interest. Therefore, take away the talent from him, and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more shall be given. Listen to this part again. Verse 29. For to everyone who has, more shall be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who does not have, even what he does have shall be taken away. Throw out the worthless slave into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. That's a harsh punishment, isn't it? Quite harsh words being given to this third slave. And I ask, what was the sin that this man did to deserve such punishment? And the answer is nothing. He did nothing, and so he deserved his punishment. Thus we discover in the scriptures that there is a sin of doing nothing. James said in James chapter 4 verse 17, to the one who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is sin. There is a sin of doing nothing. And so we need to look at this passage, because it's very important in our own lives, right? We need to ask ourselves, what does this mean for us? What do these talents represent? Of course, they were a form of money. But a lot of times nowadays, when we look at this, we oftentimes decide, you know what, I think that this means your ability or your talents in that regard. And it becomes kind of an ironic play on words, right? We say God has given us many talents, meaning our abilities. We need to use them accordingly. But I don't think that's exactly what it means here. In fact, it tells us that these talents were given each of them according to their own ability. In other words, yes, there is a connection between our ability and our talents, but that's not exactly what a talent is. The more ability you have, yes, the more talents God will give you, but that doesn't mean they are the same. So my question is, what do these talents represent? Well, I would propose that they represent our opportunities. And I can explain that further as we look at the passage that was read before the sermon. Matthew chapter 25, there starting in verse 31. We have an account of a judgment day trial. We have an account of men being separated to the left and to the right. And what we discover when we look at that is we find there were people not using the opportunities that God had given. And so let me ask you, before we get into that passage, let me ask you, are you using the opportunities that God has given you? Notice there was a risk involved with the first two slaves. They had to spend their opportunities to make more opportunities. They had to spend their money to make more money. There was a risk involved. But in the same sense, we cannot be afraid of risk and therefore not use our opportunities, because there's obviously a greater risk when the master returns, isn't there? We need to remember that each and every one of us has a talent that is unique to you, unique to me. We all have opportunities that have been granted to us by God, depending on our situation, depending on our background, depending on where we work, who we know, who we're friends with, what our job is. All of these give us different opportunities, and not one of us is the same with regards to our opportunities that God has given us to do good. I was told by a preacher one time, and it really struck home with me, but he said to me, and I'll say it to you, there is somebody out there who only you can reach with the gospel. There is somebody out there who you may be their only contact. You may be the only one who's close enough to them. You may be the only one who has the means to help them out in whatever situation they're in. You may be the only one who can help them reach Jesus, who can help them reach the gospel. That brings it all home, doesn't it? That makes us realize, yeah, even if I feel like I have fewer opportunities, even if I feel like I'm the guy with the one talent, oh boy, is it important that you still use that talent. You cannot bury your opportunities. And we notice as we look at that parable of the talents, the more you use your opportunities, the more opportunities will appear. And I was always curious about that statement that Jesus makes there when he says, to him who has, more shall be given, but to him who has not, even what he does have will be taken away. I never understood what that meant. But I believe now that that is in essence Jesus describing this idea of spiritual inertia. So the one who has, the one who's doing, more opportunities are going to be given, but the one who does not have, in other words, the one who's not using his abilities, the one who's not using his opportunities, like this man with the one talent, the one who buries his opportunities, even those opportunities are going to fall apart. They're going to die because he's not using them. An object at rest tends to stay at rest. A church at rest tends to stay at rest. And a Christian who is at rest, a Christian who is not using his opportunities, is going to lose those opportunities. But a Christian who is in motion, a Christian who is doing the things they should be doing, is going to find more and more opportunities coming their way. I read in a book recently about a true story of two different churches. They were similar in a lot of ways. They were both were And these aren't the church buildings of those churches behind me. This is just an example. Okay? But they were both nice, good-sized churches, 400 strong, in good, growing communities. They had good locations. They had really nice facilities that they were meeting at. And they were both in a situation where they could see that the city around them was growing. And so these churches met up and discussed things with one another. And one church, let's call it Church A, they said, you know what? Things are going really well for us right now. We're in a growing community. We are, you know, we have a 400 members strong. We, a lot of good things are happening. So let's just sail through. Let's just sit where we're at and let things happen the way they will. Then on the other hand, Church B, they had a meeting very similarly. But this church decided, you know what? We have a great opportunity staring us in the face. We have a growing community around us. We have a bunch of people who are going to be moving into town. How can we go out and reach them? How can we go out and help them and get others to know the love and power of Jesus? Flash forward 20 years later, as the author writes it. This Church A that had 400 members, that had really nice facilities in a growing town and a good location, was now lucky to get 50 or 60 members on a Sunday. And on the other hand, Church B, they were thriving. They had thousands of members. They were helping the homeless. They were doing all sorts of good work for children in need. They were doing more and more work. Why? Because an object in motion will stay in motion. But an object that sits at rest is going to sit at rest until it dies. The same is true of churches. There is a spiritual inertia being involved here. So now, with all of that in mind, let's go ahead and look at the passage that was read earlier. And really, it's the main point of this whole section. I said before that Jesus has been trying to tell people to get ready. He's been telling them how to get ready for the Master's return. And he's been giving illustration after illustration. The parable of the talents, even though I focused in on it, is just one of these illustrations. The main point is found here, starting in verse 31. And of course it was read, Jesus starts speaking in very literal terms. Instead of these illustrations, he's speaking very frankly about what will happen. Now, that doesn't mean the exact wording is going to be used. And yes, he does mention sheep and goats, but I want us to understand, all of the illustrations up to this point have been pointing to this main point. Think of it like illustrations in a sermon. Here's the point. Jesus says on Judgment Day, he's going to sit people on the right and he's going to sit people on the left. On the right, he's going to say to them, well done. You saw me in need. You saw me hungry. You saw me in naked and needing of clothing. You saw me in jail and came to visit me. You saw me sick and you helped me. And they respond by saying, whoa, Jesus, when did we see you? If we had seen you, surely we would have remembered, right? But Jesus says, assuredly, as you've done to the least of these, in other words, to the people around you, to the lowliest of people, whatever you've done for the people around you, even no matter how lowly you think they are, Jesus says, you've done it for me. And then he turns to those on his left and he tells them quite the opposite, really. He says, you saw me in need, you saw me sick, you saw me hungry, and you didn't do anything. And again, they responded, Jesus, when did we see you? If we had seen you, surely we would have done something. But again, Jesus tells them, what you did not do for the least of these around you, you did not do for me. And thus we see the whole point, right? We want to be ready for that day. If we want to be ready for the Master's return, we've got to be using our abilities and the opportunities that have been given us. We've got to be prudent. We've got to be on the alert. We've got to be obedient. And all of this we do by helping the people around us. You want to be ready for when Jesus comes back? Use every opportunity you have to clothe those who need clothing, to feed those who are hungry, to help those who are sick, and of course, most importantly, spiritually sick, to tell them the gospel. We've all been given opportunities, each unique to each of us. I have certain opportunities. I'm very privileged and blessed to be able to speak to a number this size and to be able to proclaim the gospel from this situation. But you have an opportunity to proclaim the gospel as well. The question is whether or not you're going to take that talent and take the risk and make more talents, or if you're going to bury it and do nothing. But if you do that, you won't be ready for when our Master returns. So let's all keep that in mind. And remember, spiritual inertia. A church at rest is going to stay at rest, but a church in motion is going to keep moving. We've been doing some great things in this church. We went out and we knocked on doors and we got to know people from the community. We prayed with them and for them. We've given out backpacks to kids who need them. You know, that's a wonderful thing we've been doing. And I know we've been doing many other things. But the answer now is not to sit back and say, okay, we tried that. Let's pause and think about things and maybe we'll do something later on. The answer now is to keep moving. To keep on working, to keep on going. We gotta push that big cart, we gotta keep it moving, and once it gets rolling, it's gonna be hard to stop. That's our church. And I promise you, I at least believe this fully, if we get moving and we keep moving, we're going to grow. And so let's do it together. But also individually, I want you to think about, as we come to a close, I want you to think about your own spiritual inertia. Are you sitting at rest or are you in motion? We have a lot of opportunities here in this congregation coming up. They were mentioned this morning. We have our Bible classes starting up on September 10th. We also have our small group starting up the same week. If you're not involved in one of those, what a great opportunity you have to be that ball on the plane and get pushed over the edge, right? What a great opportunity you have to start moving forward. To start becoming more active and to see yourself using your talents. In a few moments, we're going to have an invitation song. If you're here this morning and you feel that you are not quite as active as you should be, maybe you feel that you are an object that is at rest, a Christian that has been standing still, I hope that you'll come forward as we sing. Or if you're here this morning and you've not yet obeyed the gospel, we want to give you the opportunity to do so. Come forward, we can talk with you, we can pray with you, and if you're ready, we can baptize you into Christ. Please come as we stand and sing.